As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carborough and the Big Chill. This is Claudio of Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, John Paul.
Good morning.
Who likes to say good morning? And also the prominent, rather renowned, I would say, accomplished, and a few other things I could add to that, Alan Hall, the theatre critic and reviewer. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you for having me again.
We're trying to tweak some of the audio here a little bit. John Paul, could you give me a little more feedback in my headset here so I can hear myself?
You sure you want feedback, or would you like to hear yourself?
I'm not sure I want me feeding me back, sorry. But I'm not really picking up much sound in the headset at all. But anyway, so we're going to dig into Alan Hall's life. We had actually had him on once before, but didn't manage to get the archive, so I'm hoping to establish that this time. I didn't want to disappoint my old friend in that regard, but I do want to hear what he's been up to anyway, what he's been reviewing. I don't know what we've got going on here with the... We'll just live with it. I'm sure the public hears me fine. I just don't hear my... That's much better, whatever you just did. Hallelujah. Okay, you can probably turn me down a little now. Forgive us, folks. We're just trying to get the system up and running. There's some complications in the studio this morning.
There we go. How we doing now?
I think as long as we back off a little, we're fine. It seems like the system's
That's
hot.
Good.
Okay.
Everybody comfortable? Good.
Off we
go. Again, welcome to the speakeasy, Alan R. Hall, whom we have sitting here with us. And John Paul, I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to launch the brigade with. We've got a few topics we're going to touch on later that go more into the political arena, which is the unmedia content of the show, John Paul's bag of tricks.
Well, my take is pretty much the same. I think that the entire political system is utterly corrupt. The Democrats and the Republicans are in on it together. No matter who we put in the White House, we're not going to get out of Iraq. We're not going to get out of Afghanistan. We're still going to attack Iran. We're still going to support dictatorships all over the world. We're still going to go remove democratically elected governments from any country that doesn't kowtow to the U.S. corporatocracy. We're basically doomed. And with that pleasant note, I'll turn it back to you.
And where's my coffee? So welcome back, Americana. We're here. Alan, just wanted to connect with you a little bit on what got you into the theater reviewing and basically what you do in the arts in the first place. What was your fascination to turn in that direction?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that I came at it from an angle which most people do not come from, which is to say from the stage itself. If usually when you are a critic, you are an observer of the arts.
Yes.
I came to it from a very different angle. I came to it as a worker in the arts, as an actor. And the interesting thing about that was that if you're viewing a work as an actor, then you're looking at it usually from the viewpoint, if not of one of the players, as the director. And that's an entirely different way to look at a piece of work than it is to simply sit back and watch the story unfold. So there were several things that were advantageous about that and several things that were not advantageous about it. When one looks at a role in a show and realizes what the actor puts into that role in order to bring it to the stage, then there is a lot less of a chance that you look at it as strictly a structure.
I agree.
You look at it more as an unfolding role.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a tendency to be a little less critical about it when you first begin working in that vein. There are people who will tell you that I have become a little more rigid in my style since I first started writing, and that's probably a factor of having done it for so long.
Being well seasoned in the craft. Excuse us for one moment, John Paul. We're picking up outside traffic noises with this. I'm wondering, can we tweak this down here just a little bit? Because I'm hearing every car and bus that's driving by. Is it down here?
Wait a minute. That has nothing to do with that. Sorry.
I mean, you.
It's coming through the microphones. And
can we turn it down somehow?
Turn down the microphones, and then we won't be as loud.
Well, turn them down.
You're just hearing more in your headphones than you used to, is what it is. They're louder.
So we have no control?
Yeah, and for anybody out there listening, this is live radio.
Yes, yes. And so we have no volume level at all?
We have. Sure.
Give us a
can turn your headphones down.
Maybe do that.
Okay.
Sorry, folks. That's just too much of me coming through here. 1, 2, 1, 2, and now we got nothing. Okay.
You want more?
Just a touch. Sorry about that, Alan.
How's that?
A little more.
Say testing, testing.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, that'll do. Thanks.
Wasn't that fun, everyone?
I was just hearing the traffic outside like I was standing in the street. Sorry, folks. Again, this is Claudio Speakeasy. Back to Alan Hall. Alan, I really apologize for the interruption there.
Not a problem. It works like that in live
sometimes.
Radio.
Yeah, this is a volunteer radio station, so we don't have like the utmost of situations.
And this is a bootleg copy. So anyway, back to you. I'm sorry, Alan.
Not a problem.
Something about more rigid in your writing style.
It's simply a matter of learning to sit back and observe the play as a whole and be willing to look at the production and say, what works for this production, what doesn't work for this production, and why.
And what drew you into that from the acting perspective? Because sometimes that can be a very isolated perspective, being that you're given to that.
It was an ability, or rather the possibility, I should say, to be able to take what was a writing style and be able to apply it to something that I was familiar with already.
Mm-hmm.
Take the theater and be able to write about it.
So were you always sort of on both sides of the fence, or were you more...
I was on both sides of the fence, but there was no conduit.
I see. Okay.
The theater was on one side of the fence, the writing was on another side of the fence, mm-hmm. and the fence did not have a gate.
Yes, and I understand.
We found that gate. And that was back in 1989.
And how did you find that gate?
A friend found it for me, and she said, "Alan, you've got to do this. I know you're going to love it." And so I walked into the Chapel Hill newspaper, which was at the time a daily except for Saturday, and told them, "If you need a writer, I'm here to write." And they sent me on an assignment, and that's what started it.
Interesting, because I remember those Chapel Hill news days quite well. I think that's during the time that you and I met years ago.
I believe it was, yeah.
And you have actually departed from there at this point.
Well, the Chapel Hill newspaper decided that they were going to have to reduce a number of different things. First, they went from what was essentially a weekly, a six-paper-a-week paper, to a three-paper-a-week paper. And they are now a two-paper-a-week paper. And this is the sad but true story of what's happening everywhere in the United States. The newspaper business is a shrinking commodity. And it has become, in the Chapel Hill newspaper, very much a part of its now overviewed paper,
mm-hmm.
which is the News and Observer.
So is it part of that family now?
Oh, yes. Okay. You can check on the side of the building as you drive by the Chapel Hill News, and it says Orange County subsidiary of the News and Observer.
That was the big fish.
The News and Observer ads now run in the Chapel Hill News, and the Chapel Hill News has become, even more so than it was to begin with, a very much local newspaper. And the reason for that is that the national news is available in the News and Observer.
Mm-hmm.
This is a typical move for a conglomerate newspaper, because the smaller local newspapers are not being able in this day and age to keep up with what they used to do. And it's a sad but true fact that in order to keep their heads above water, there are certain things that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And loss of the opinion page, for example, was one of those losses. I went on to write a review weekly for a national online letter called ThemeStream.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted for over a year before it also went by the wayside. And then I started writing my own and publishing it under Front Row Center.
Right.
And I did that for 7 years.
And you actually departed from that as well at this point.
I did, because I'm working for a very fine company in Raleigh, the Triangle Theater Reviews, which is a subsidiary of the Classical Voice of North Carolina.
Ah, okay. I wasn't quite sure what their background was.
And they are both based out of Raleigh and are available online through www.cvnc.org. And they do all reviews and all music in the North Carolina state.
Uh-huh, okay.
Classical music, theater in the Triangle, also reviews of CDs for classical music, reviews of shows done in North Carolina by national classicists, as well as previews and a calendar.
Fantastic.
So it's quite an extensive...
How long have they been around?
They've been around at least, I'll say, 7 years.
Uh-huh, okay.
Classical Voice of North Carolina obtained the Triangle Theater Reviews about that time. Now, I know that Robert McDowell, who runs Triangle Theater Reviews,
mm-hmm.
had been doing online writing as very much I had. For several years before that. But when Triangle Theater Reviews and the Classical Voice of North Carolina came together, that was about 7 years ago.
I know I've heard of Classical Voice, but I didn't realize the affiliations
until
you told me about them, really.
And John Lambert, who is the gentleman who runs the Classical Voice of North Carolina out of Raleigh, has been... expanding the paper and spreading it across the state for many, many years.
Now, is it primarily up on computer, or is it also
yes,
a magazine?
Yes, it's up on the web. You go to that address I gave you,
yes.
cvnc.org, and you can pull up the entire newspaper, get the reviews, the previews, the calendar, and it's all right there in
Fantastic.
A very friendly format.
Well, jumping around to your background in the reviewing department and the critique of theater, what are some of your favorite ones, if you were to recall?
Oh, my.
And I'm not asking for any bias here, just some things that you responded to that you enjoyed particularly.
Well, the first thing that came to mind was a King Lear that was done here at Playmakers. As a general rule, I am a strict classicist when it comes to Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
and this was not by any means or stretch of the imagination strict classicism as far as the interpretation
uh-huh.
of King Lear was
okay.
concerned. But it was a bang-up show, and it was stirring and frightening.
What was the angle? What made it not be necessarily that classicist?
Futuristic war.
Ah, okay, brought more
mm-hmm.
into the modern.
And in fact, it started out with slings and arrows,
mm-hmm.
and moved as the show progressed through the plane and through the process of war advancement until at the end of the play we were in with jets and bombs and atomics and the modern day clashes of war, and it worked phenomenally well.
Interesting. Any others that come to mind?
Actually,
just knowing that you've reviewed in so many venues.
There is a play that I saw done at Theater in the Park with two very impressive local actors called Stones in His Pockets, which was written by an Irishman and set in Ireland, which was a very comic piece in that these two gentlemen played the entire cast. of 20 or so people and do it on a dime. It's very much almost radio theater, except that you actually see these characters change in a flash.
What did they do, turn around and then face the audience again, or was it just taking on different
personas? It's not even quite that much, although it was done on occasion, but it was simply a matter of watching those characters change facial expression, and you knew immediately that they had gone from one character to another.
Interesting.
Voice inflection, body language, and the two of them did such a stupendous job that that play has come around again to be played in the Triangle area almost 5 times since then.
Wow, what's the name again?
It's called Stones in His Pockets.
Stones in His Pockets. I've actually heard of that.
The actual reference is something that takes you a little bit aback at the end of the first act, because what you have viewed as a comedy up until this point comes up very short when we learn that one of the characters that has been portrayed on stage puts stones in his pockets and walks into the lake. And that is the reference.
Interesting. Boy, what a reference.
And so it is both manic comedy and the very darkling troubles of Ireland brought to the stage.
Which continue, I'm afraid to say.
So that was something that opened a floodgate and brought Stones in His Pockets into the Triangle in a big way.
I haven't heard of it playing anywhere recently, but I wouldn't be surprised if it pops up again in the near future.
I think it's going to pop up at Temple very shortly.
Oh, good. Okay. I know. What's she doing now? Some sort of a musical. Patsy Cline, I think.
Yes.
Peggy. Hello out there to Peggy Taphorn.
Hi, Peggy.
She's doing, I think, Patsy Cline, the musical, which I'd really love to go see.
Yeah, that's right.
I have to break away and
Where is she doing that? Where is she doing that?
Where is she? At Temple, of course.
Oh, she's doing it at Temple?
Yeah.
Because she had one she was going to go someplace else and do.
I think that's done. She was gone for a good portion of the summer. I think that's where she went. Also want to, since we're on theater here, give a big thank you to the Carolina Theater, which is showing, or actually has, Lost Lonely Boys performing on that stage tonight. So if anybody is interested in checking that out, that's happening. They've also got some new films. I think one is, what's that film? The new Coen Brothers film is playing there. And another one, Burn After Reading, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Burn After Reading.
Yeah. Okay. And which I'm told by several people that have seen is actually very enjoyable. So. Should be a typical Coen Brothers. It's kind of a switch from the last one. No Land for Old Men, or what was that called?
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, yep. Which was.
Of course, I don't know anything about movies, so I'm like the last person to ask. But I'm going to change my ways.
He is.
Going to start looking at
That's
movies.
That's right. Speaking of which, you're going to be looking at a film by that John Demers is helping put together. We just acquired Cabin in the Woods Studios Inc. as an underwriter for the Speakeasy, Claudio Speakeasy. And John Demers is currently engaged in Will to Power, the movie, which I think you can look up on the computer by exactly that, Will to Power, the movie. And it will give you links. The media screening is apparently scheduled on this Friday, and I think you and I have been invited, thanks to you asking, John Paul. I think for the most part it's going to be shown at the School of Communication Arts.
Yeah, over in Raleigh.
Over in Raleigh, and it is invitation only. But that's... an independent film that's supposed to be screening quite soon for the public.
Should be interesting.
Again, by our Cabin in the Woods Studios, Inc., via John Demers, that have just become a sponsor or an underwriter for the Speakeasy. Happy to have you on board, man. Thanks for
WCOM.
That's right. Thanks for being part of the family. So, let's bounce over to you for a second there, John Paul. And I actually have a little a few teeth to grind in some political aspect as well. Yes, I have a bite to take myself. I don't know what... I don't know that we want to elaborate on this, but I'd certainly like to bring it up. There was this question of Palin... Is it Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin.
Wanting to ban books in a library. Now, the immediate thing, I realize that some of this is speculation and we're not sure just how true it is and how far she went with this, but there is a degree of truth in it. Which makes me question, especially looking at the Republican Party. Here we are telling the American people that we are over there fighting a war to protect the American way of life, when our very politicians over here are destroying that life we are supposedly protecting with the blood of our children.
Exactly.
This is just the ultimate hypocrisy.
Well, my understanding of the story is that she tried to get the librarian to remove some books from the library, and the librarian refused, so she fired her. And
she was gone for a day or something.
There was a huge uproar immediately, and so the next day she was reinstated. The librarian stayed on for some time after that and eventually left the employ of Wasilla. This is the library in Wasilla. This is before she was governor.
Wasilla, Alaska.
This is when she was mayor of Wasilla. And all the information indicates that essentially is what happened. And we don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen an authoritative list of the books.
That's my concern there, too.
There's one that went around which has been debunked because some of the stuff wasn't even published, apparently, at the time.
Yes, I've heard that, too. I imagine it was some kind of a power play, maybe just sort of testing the waters.
I think there's little doubt that there was a power play that she wanted to impose her fascist Nazi attitude on the library, and the librarian wasn't going to have it. And
I wonder how Johnny felt about it.
Johnny?
McCain.
Well, he didn't know her at the time.
Oh, that's right, he didn't.
In fact, he still doesn't know her.
Yeah, I think they just sort of picked her out of a basket.
He's still learning what she's really about. Basically, she's just a nut, a right-wing nut. She believes in creationism. You know, did you know that?
She wants
creationism taught in the Alaskan public school system.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which, you know what, creationism has humans and dinosaurs living together on the Earth 5,000 years ago. That's what creationism teaches.
It sounds like they'd be pretty interesting pets.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Ride them to the next town.
Would it be the humans who are the pets?
Who's the pet?
I think the humans would be the pets.
Yes, and then the appetizer.
Yes, and the appetizers.
You raise them for food. That's what they're for.
Yes, that's what they're for. Humans are for food.
Yes, boy, did we get it wrong.
We are top of the food chain, after all.
There you go.
I think nature's beginning to show us that. Anyway, there's something I would like to read, and then we can maybe elaborate a little more on this. We don't want to make this a political agenda today, but there are just some things that are surfacing so in your face that I just don't think they can be absolutely ignored. I do have a statement that I'd like to read from Deepak Chopra. What is his background exactly?
He's a spiritual advisor, a philosopher, a New Age consciousness person.
I just happened to read this, and I felt like it was a good. He pulled all the elements together quite well, and I think this is something that needs to be said right now. I think this is titled "The Obama and Palin Effect," and I'm not taking any political sides on this. I consider myself an independent, neither left nor right, and begin to wonder about the middle. But
there's no such thing as left and right.
Right. Here we go, by Deepak Chopra. Sometimes politics has the uncanny effect of mirroring the national psyche, even when nobody intended to do that. This is perfectly illustrated by the rousing effect that Governor Sarah Palin had on the Republican convention in Minneapolis this week. On the surface, she outdoes former Vice President Dan Quayle as an unlikely choice, given her negligent parochial expertise in the complex affairs of governing. Her state of Alaska has less than 700,000 residents, which reduces the job of governor to the scale of a running-gone tenth of New York City. By comparison, Rudy Giuliani is a towering international figure. Palin's pluck has been admired, and her forthrightness, but her real appeal goes deeper. She is the reverse of Barack Obama, in essence his shadow, deriding his idealism and turning negativity into a cause for pride. In psychological terms, the shadow is that part of the psyche that hides out of sight, countering our aspirations, virtue, and vision with qualities we are ashamed to face: anger, fear, revenge, violence, selfishness, and suspicion of the other. For millions of Americans, Obama triggers those feelings, but they do not want to express them. He is calling for us to reach for our higher selves, and frankly, that stirs up hidden reactions of an unsavory kind. Just to be perfectly clear, I am not making a verbal play out of the fact that Senator Obama is black. The shadow is a metaphor widely in use before his arrival on the scene. I recognize that psychological analysis of politics is usually not welcomed by the public, but I believe such a perspective can be helpful here to understand Palin's message. In her acceptance speech, Governor Palin sent a rousing call to those who want to celebrate their resistance to change and a higher vision. Look at what she stands for. First bullet, small town values. A nostalgic return to simpler times disguises a denial of America's global role, a return to petty, small-minded parochialism. Second bullet, ignorance of world affairs, a repudiation of the need to repair America's image abroad. Third bullet, family values, a code for walling out anybody who makes a claim for social justice. Such strangers being outside the family don't need to be needed. Fourth, rigid stands on guns and abortion. A scornful repudiation.
Easy for you to say.
Try it again. Rigid stands on guns and abortion. A scornful repudiation that 20 of these issues can be negotiated with those who disagree. I'm not quite sure where that went.
There must be a typo.
There's a typo. Sorry, folks. I'm reading directly here. The next bullet being patriotism. The usual fallback in a failed war. Patriotism. The usual fallback in a failed war.
Yes.
I'm almost wanting to say that three times, but I think you got it. And then finally, reform. An italicized term, since in addition to cleaning out corruption and excessive spending, one also throws out anyone who doesn't fit your ideology.
Amen.
Palin reinforces the overall message of the reactionary right, which has been at play since 1980. That social justice is liberal, radical. That minorities and immigrants, being different from us, pure American types, can be ignored. That progressivism takes too much effort and globalism is a foreign threat. The radical right marches under the banners of I'm all right, Jack, and why change? Everything's okay as it is. Well, we certainly hear Bush continuing to repeat that, no matter how bad the economy gets. The irony, of course, is that Governor Palin is a woman and a reactionary at the same time. She can add mom to apple pie on her resume while blithely reversing 40 years of feminist progress. The irony is superficial. There are millions of women who stand on the side of conservatism. However, obviously, they are voting against their own good. The Republicans have won multiple national elections by raising shadow issues based on fear, rejection, hostility to change, and narrow-mindedness. Obama's call for higher ideals in politics can be seen in a vacuum. The shadow is real. It was bound to respond. Not just conservatives possess a shadow. We all do. So what comes next is a contest between the two forces of progress and inertia. Will the shadow win again, or has its furtive appeal become exhausted? No one can predict. The best thing about Governor Palin is that she brought this conflict to light, which makes the upcoming debate honest. It would be a shame to elect another Reagan whose smiling persona was a stalking horse for the reactionary forces that have brought us to the demoralized state we are in. We deserve to see what we are getting without disguise.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things about Palin that's really starting to emerge is how much of a liar she is.
Well, that's just falling in step.
It's now become very, very clear, and I'm a bit surprised actually that they let this on the mainstream media with Charlie Gibson when he questioned her. He did everything but call her a liar, and I think he should have actually called her a liar. Or at least he should have referred to what she said as lies when she talked about the bridge to nowhere. When she came out, she said,
which she supported originally.
She said something like, I told the government thanks but no thanks for the bridge to nowhere.
Yeah, right.
Which was a complete and utter fabrication. And in fact, she never said anything like that to anybody in the government. She was wholeheartedly in support of it. She wore a T-shirt in support of it. She's been photographed and videotaped talking about her support for it.
Nowhere, Alaska, 99901.
Yeah, right, on the T-shirt.
Interesting.
So the thing is that it's become so clear now that she's a bald-faced liar that it's just you can't deny it anymore. I mean, and that's not the only thing she's lied about. I mean,
she's
stonewalling
also,
the investigation.
Using the the office of governor of Alaska to her most personal advantage.
Yeah, in the trooper gate.
That way,
it's not only in the trooper gate, but also in the fact that she manages to use a per diem to stay away from the governor's office and stay at home with her family.
Right. She stays at home for 300 and something days and charged the government a per diem for being at home.
Wonderful. And may I remind you, folks, we are the governor. It's our money they're taking.
Yeah, per diems are supposed to be for travel.
She has a governor's mansion that she doesn't spend time in.
She doesn't stay there.
And the fact that she doesn't spend time in the governor's mansion means that she's off site and is therefore entitled to a, quote, per diem for being off site.
I've heard of this, yeah.
So it's technically legal, but it's certainly, I don't know.
Smarmy.
Smarmy, yes.
Does that mean there'll be an empty room in the White House, should she get it?
Well,
I know a couple of drifters looking for a place
nice.
To stay.
Well, of course, as vice president, she wouldn't live in the White House.
The vice president lives in the, being as quiet and unrenowned as Quayle was would be nice in this instance. But the fact that Sarah Palin has been nominated in the first place is
an obscene
what tells
joke.
Me that we cannot, dare not, should not put John McCain in the White House because he is bolstered, funded, and supplied by the far right.
Absolutely.
Both religiously and politically. And the fact that he puts someone who so blatantly follows the far-right agenda and is willing to do so publicly is a direct poke in the eye at what I call balanced politics. Now, that may be a contradiction in terms.
Very likely.
But I can see no recourse, as far as I am concerned, rather than to vote Democratic in this election, because I cannot possibly imagine putting those two in the White House.
It is at best the lesser of two evils, that's for sure.
That's what it is. It's the lesser of two evils. The Democrats and the Republicans are, I think there's about a dime's worth of difference between them, and I do agree that Obama is not as bad as McCain is. However, Obama is not going to get us out of Iraq. He's not going to try to get the Patriot Act repealed. He's not going to hold the telecoms accountable for warrantless spying. He hasn't done anything to promote the idea of holding the administration responsible for all of their crimes.
I haven't heard anything, right?
He's made absolutely no attempt to talk about the horrendous injustices that have been done by this government. And
worldwide.
So, I mean, while I agree that he would not be as bad as McCain is, he's not going to stop our very rapid descent into fascism in this country. We are nearly completely a fascist state now.
And this is the way of life we are defending with wars abroad, fascism?
Essentially, yes.
Essentially,
And we are imposing it on other countries, too. And we're continually trying to do that. It's just come out, and this is now very, very well documented, that the United States has been sending money to the opposition in Bolivia and funding these demonstrations that have resulted in the brutal killings of demonstrators in Bolivia. People who support Evo Morales, the democratically elected president of Bolivia, the opposition, the corporatists down there, have funded these operations with U.S. money from the National Endowment for Democracy, which is administered by USAID. And this money has gone towards supporting these groups that have taken machetes to the streets and hacked Bolivia's indigenous people who support Morales, hacked them to death, eight of them.
And this is being done with the American people's money.
That's right. It's been done with the American people's money.
Because American people have this notion.
What is it you want to do? I mean, you can't do anything until the election because there's nothing that this entrenched
Obama has said
president
not
a, can
neither Obama nor McCain have said one single word about this. That's
what
you can do.
I don't think that's the kind of thing you're going to bring up in a political battle.
Not right now.
But I think it's exactly the kind of thing that should be brought up in a political battle.
Another thing.
It goes to the character of our nation. And the fact that our government is doing this in our name is totally abhorrent.
With our money.
With our money.
This is the government doesn't have its own money. We are the government. We provide the government with money. I get so tired of people saying, I don't want the government to do this for me. The money's yours, fool.
Well, they tell you that, and then they talk like it's the government's money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Government gets it from your pocket.
Yeah.
Keep that in
Good
mind.
Good point.
So when you need to get that money, you need to get it. Not decide that you want to be of the strange nobility. Anyway.
The thing that I'm afraid of is that items such as you list as where you were making your references, Libya?
Bolivia.
No, Bolivia.
Bolivia.
Bolivia, yeah.
Bolivia is a warlocked state at this point.
I don't understand what that means.
It's got...
Entrenched in battle.
If it's... No, it's not. Well, it's got two warring factions. It's got a government and a drug lord company.
No, not Bolivia. No, they don't. No,
but Bolivia's, they will.
What the situation in Bolivia is that you have a portion of the country, the eastern portion of the country, where there are five provinces or states, which are run by the corporatists. Those are the states that giant U.S. corporations and international corporations have a huge stake in because they want to control the natural resources of those countries. And the main natural resource of Bolivia now is gas, natural gas. They have probably the largest reserves of natural gas in the entire world. And they ship this natural gas to other South American countries bordering them. And what the struggle is for control of those natural resources. Evo Morales, since he was elected, has been putting those resources to work for the people of Bolivia, building infrastructure, building medical clinics, taking care of poor people, trying to establish a building of wealth from the bottom up instead of from the top down like we do here in our country. And this is not acceptable to the corporatists because it means they don't get all the profits. Evo Morales has turned that on its head, and they have been plotting to kill him for years now. And he just, by the way, they just had a referendum. These provinces insisted that they have a recall. So they had a recall election. He won the recall by a huge majority. He got 67% of the vote. The people of Bolivia love this man. He does what he says he's going to do. There's not a state of war in Bolivia.
Well,
there
if these is, are corporatist states that you're referring to.
I think Alan was looking more at the idea of the overthrow of that government.
You're right about that. They are trying to overthrow him.
Yes,
and that's a sort of a warish kind of approach. Yeah.
But are these capitalist states? Are they working with their own money, or are they working with United States money?
Well, they're not capitalist states, but regardless of that, they are being funded to the tune
corporatist states. Yeah, I mean to say not capitalist.
Yeah, they are. These activities that they're doing, the press, the demonstrations, the support is coming from USAID. That's a U.S. government agency that administers funds appropriated by Congress under the National Endowment for Democracy. And they are spending that money exclusively on opposition activities in Bolivia. They are giving tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to these people who are in opposition to Morales. They're trying to overthrow the government. They've made no bones about it. They are trying to destabilize the Morales government.
And they're doing this instead of fixing things that need fixing here with our money.
That's right. And they're not just doing it in Bolivia, by the way. They're doing it in Ecuador. They're doing it in Venezuela. Venezuela has a democratically elected government. These two countries, Bolivia and Venezuela, are probably the most democratic representative governments on earth right now. They've both been highly verified by recall elections. Chavez won the recall election overwhelmingly a couple of years ago. Morales has just won a recall election by a huge percentage. He was elected by 55% of the vote. He won the recall election with 67% of the vote.
And the United States considers these to be... And
the United States, the State Department always comes out with this stuff about how he's a dictator. He is not a dictator. He is a perfectly legitimate, democratically elected president of a country.
So the best thing that I can see to do is to get the present regime, if you can, if I can call it that, out of the American White House.
Well, it would be nice if that would do the trick, but it won't, because it's our Congress, which is now democratically controlled, which is making all this stuff happen. If they wanted to stop what's going on with our intervention in Bolivia, they could do it just like that.
Overnight.
All they've got to do is stop the funding. They can pass a bill in the legislature. Nancy Pelosi could bring up a bill, pass it in the legislature, just like that, and say no more money can go towards trying to destabilize the Bolivian government. Just like that. And Obama should be saying to the public in his campaign speeches, we should not be intervening in the government's activities in Bolivia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Guatemala, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, Brazil. We're screwing with all of those things.
And what you're saying is that once Barack Obama, if elected, gets into the White House, that that's not going to change. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying exactly that.
We can only hope that the people may sway him.
Mark my words. I would love to be wrong about this.
Yes.
But I hope you are wrong. I think you will be wrong.
I hope I am, but I'm not. I guarantee you, nothing is going to be done.
At this very moment, John Paul is not wrong. We'll see how that changes.
We won't know until the future, but I'm saying I really don't believe I'm wrong. I think that's where we're going.
Since we're tooting the horn of democracy, the one thing that I, for some reason, never seem to hear by any of these people running for office or even by the public, it should be a public outcry to have more transparency in government. I mean, we've been blindsided for the last 8 years. Now, why is nobody making mention that we want transparency?
Well,
in government?
Is one thing that Obama has been talking about. He has been saying
I haven't heard that
he's going to have more transparency in government. And I have to commend him for that. I think that's obviously what we have to have.
Well, I think it's reaching a point where people are going to insist on it. At least I hope so.
Well, it has been debated hotly on by the powers that be on the AOL network that the economy has now become the single most driving element in the election and will, in fact, decide the election come November.
Every new day, there's a new collapse.
We are...
Yeah, it's just like dominoes. Man.
They've been talking on television about how some of these collapses are beginning to reflect the 1920s.
Yeah.
Yes.
That this will be the first depression of the new millennia. And that we are headed down a very slippery slope. And
by the way,
John Steinbeck had a few things to say about
this.
It.
I've been saying we were coming to this for at least 4 years now. I've been talking about this. Of course, I picked up on it from other people, scholars mainly, who have been talking about this, economists.
Mm-hmm.
This has been foreseen by so many people, and they've talked about it so much, and it still happened.
I know.
I believe that it's planned. I think what we're seeing
it has to be organized.
Yeah, it's a result of a plan, and it's now coming to fruition because it's the end of this administration's term.
Isn't it interesting that
they've had to do it?
Isn't it interesting that C.S. Lewis in 1935 made the statement that fascism will come to America as a cross wrapped in a flag?
Yes,
C.S. Lewis, 1935,
C.S. Lewis.
The Narnia Chronicles. Indeed. Amazing. Well, to bring an edge to this indigestion of Americana, on the speakeasy.
Let me go get my Tums out of the car.
I'll take a dozen, because I want to go back and explore a little more of Alan Hall's life. He is also, among other things, an author and a writer of other topics and other subjects. As a matter of fact, you told me you had somewhat of an Arthurian tale that you were
penning presently. That's true, yes. We, as in the multiple characters in my head, are in the process of bringing to a close an Arthurian legend that takes place in an entirely fictional country, wedged very tightly between the borders of Norway and Sweden.
Oh, interesting premise.
That would be a very tight spot, wouldn't it?
Very tight spot.
And, Norway and
Sweden. It's another dimension.
Considering that that is now a continuous border, it's kind of hard to wedge anything in there. And considering that this country is not very large, it's obvious that it was absorbed shortly thereafter. But nevertheless, it did exist at one point. And the gentleman who turns out to be the instigator of this entire tale, as he tells it to Arthur, mm-hmm. in the castle in England, is a woman who comes and breaks a spell, more or less, that has been placed upon the land.
So we're dealing a little bit with witchcraft as well in this regard.
Not so much witchcraft as it is simply evil.
Okay.
There are no witches in the story, despite the fact that some are accused of witchery.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What it boils down to is that this lovely lady who comes and bewitches the king, he makes her his queen. And this causes a great deal of turmoil across the land. But it turns out that she is a very benevolent lady who has come to teach the king benevolence. She has, however, one particularly interesting trait in that she eschews clothing and becomes known as the Naked Queen, which is the title of the book.
The Naked Queen.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. That's a page-turner. Are there pictures?
Well, that immediately makes me wonder who's going to play her in the movie.
Yes, who looks
someone
good
from
naked.
The neck up. I've actually considered that. I said, that's going to have to be someone from the neck up. Neck up. That's it.
Yeah.
And how far along are you with the story?
We have come to the crux of the matter. We are currently in the opening pages of the climax.
Oh, interesting. So two-thirds is done, you would say?
Two-thirds is done, yes.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Oh, neat.
Any other stories you're writing, or is it just that one? Because the reason I ask is because I know I'm usually working on three or four at the same time.
Three or four at the same time, yes. There is a play in writing at the moment. It's an interesting play in that it is a grand total of 180 seconds in length.
Oh, interesting.
Known as a three-minute play.
Yeah.
These have been introduced to the area by the Art Center.
Yes, I've heard of that. Yeah. Is that a monologue?
And no, this is a duel. This is a duet. It takes place between a hunter and a bear. Mm. And
which one of them speaks?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
The three-minute play has become celebrated over at the Play Slam, which is taking place at the end of this month at the Art Center. You should all grab a ticket and go.
I do when I go and catch that.
You are greatly a part of the evening because you vote on the three-minute play that you consider to be your favorite.
Okay. All right.
And that author is then allowed to present a second play. So there are five authors that move from first play to second play.
And how many plays do they have to have
act,
on hand?
The Sorry. Second, each person who is chosen to be in the Play Slam mm-hmm. must present to the Art Center two different three-minute plays.
Okay.
Therefore, if you are chosen to move to the second half of the show, you have the second play to produce.
Right.
There are all sorts of magical tricks of how one presents the two plays in order to get from A to B and therefore to win the night's pot, which is a nice big beer mug full of money.
Ah, good.
Totaling $100. The very last person to win the Play Slam last year was a gentleman who had entered three times before and took away both shows with hilarious comedies. The gentleman who won prior to that year had never before written three-minute plays and had never before entered them in any kind of contest. So he was the winner on his very first try.
Well,
wow.
He's a local playwright who is immensely funny. Funny being probably the best way to grab an audience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Especially if you've only got 180 seconds to
do. Yeah, you really don't have much time to develop much seriousness, do you?
Although it will be done. It
come out be, standing on your head.
It can be done, I guess, yeah.
It can indeed. And yeah, in fact, is some of the evening's best shows were the dramatic ones. Mm. But it's never anything but lively. Lively is the underpinning of the entire show. You've got anywhere from 10 to 13 three-minute plays to be presented, and then those winners present five more. So you can get up to... we have had evenings of up to 18 plays, and they are always interesting and hysterically fun.
And you're creating two of these?
I am creating two of them. Only the one is anywhere near being put down on paper. Mm-hmm. The second one is still being batted around in the gray matter.
Well, on that note, John Paul, we might want to do our little LP scenario here for the WCOM.
You mean this is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carborough?
That's what I mean. 103.5 FM. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. In the studio with us today, we have the renowned theater critic and reviewer, Alan R. Hall, who is known throughout the Triangle and God knows where else. He is quite multidimensional, involved in some of the arts himself, especially in the writing arts. And I also want to make a quick mention here, something in respect to the Fall Shikori Hills Grassroots Festival of Music and Dance, which will be held on Thursday, October 9th through Sunday, October 12th at 1439 Henderson, Tanyard Road, Silcope, North Carolina, just down the road from Chapel Hill and Carborough. Okay, I guess I was kind of beginning to wonder there.
By way of Pittsburgh.
There we go. Okay, good. The festival will feature more than 40 bands and performers on two big outdoor stages, a large dance tent, and an intimate cabaret tent. Ooh, I like that. I may have to go there. It's not far from me. Headliners include the Del McCurry Band, the Carolina Chocolate Drops, Nina Freelon, the Dukes, Donna, the Buffalo, and Aileen Ivers. Other activities include a sustainability fair. Sustainability fair, right?
Lots of, you know, like environmental sustainability
and
energy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was wondering what we were sustaining there. Lots of family and kids events, as well as a family-friendly camping area. As always, there will be fabulous craft vendors, gourmet food, healing artists, workshops, poetry, and instrument contests. And drum circles. Special guests are the Paper Hand Puppet Intervention, which will be joining in on the Sunday celebration. Yeah. Ticket
the
information.
The Paper Hand Puppets is a group that comes to us from Saxapaw.
Ah, okay.
And do a great deal of lovely, magnificent puppetry in the Forest Theater every summer.
Wonderful.
Big puppets.
Big
right?
puppets.
Giant
20
puppets.
20-foot
really?
Puppets.
Yeah,
my goodness.
Very large puppets.
Well, that'd be worth seeing.
And they do them in quite interesting historical-based storytelling.
I got you. Okay.
And have been doing so ever since... We lost the dearly departed North Carolina, if you'll bear with me a moment, sure. I'll bring the name up. it comes very close to Chasm. The Chapel Hill Anti-Shakespeare Festival the one that opened up the possibilities of the Thompson Theater, Forest Theater, on Country Club Road here in Chapel Hill and part of the university.
Hmm.
They did that for many years. Paper Hand Puppets joined them not long ago and proceeded to continue to do shows in the Forest Theater once the Anti-Shakespeare Festival closed. So they have become quite a dynamic group.
Yeah.
And continue to make new and puppets that will leave you agog.
Well, it sounds like something worth pursuing. And for ticket information, they are on sale and are available online at www.shakorihills.org. That's S-H-A-K-O-R-I-H-I-L-L-S rihill.org and by telephone at 919-542-8142. For schedule, directions, and other information, please visit www.shakorihills.org or call 919-542-8142. And that is the announcement.
There it is. That is a local number. You can reach it. It is a Pittsburgh number. You can reach it from Chapel Hill with absolutely no problem. And they will give you directions to Silk Hope. The fastest way to do it is to go down to Pittsboro on 15501, turn right on 64, head towards Ashboro, and you'll see the signs for Silk Hope.
Wonderful. And there you have it from the reviewer himself,
there
who
you go.
Knows well of what he speaks, Alan R. Hall.
Yes.
Alan, I'd just like to thank you for being on the show today.
Certainly.
At some point, I'd like to have you on and you and I sort of get into a conversation and go on more extensively. There were a few bones to chew today, so we didn't really dig into your life as much as I wanted to, but it just seems that some issues so prevalent in the news right now, and I thought they deserved some attention.
It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you for being on The Speakeasy, and John Paul, thanks for your usual
Well, we still have
bent.
About 4.5 minutes.
Well, I'm not done speaking yet.
Okay.
We can certainly carry on for a bit. Now, I wanted to mention, too, that coming up next will be Touchstones with Paul Nash. And I want to thank our sponsors, our underwriters, the Carolina Theater, the historic Carolina Theater of Durham, who is presenting the Lost Lonely Boys concert tonight in Fletcher Hall. Also, want to thank John Demers and Cabin in the Woods Studios, Inc. for just joining us as an underwriter.
Well, tell us a little about the Lonely Boys.
I don't really know much about the Lonely Boys, except that I had to turn down working the stage manager for it because of events here at the radio station.
Oh.
They wanted it would have been a relatively early call, and couldn't make it. And plus, at the time, I didn't think I had a car. I had a very interesting thing happen there.
Oh, yes.
In case this happens to anybody out there, I tried to pull in park at the Carolina Theater with my Chrysler New Yorker, and apparently I don't know if I didn't come to a full stop or what it was.
Okay,
but
let's just face it. You broke it.
I broke it somehow.
You broke it.
The whole thing locked up on me. And between
and
getting...
it miraculously repaired itself.
Well, between getting loaded up on the AAA... what do you call it? The wrecking truck or tow truck?
Yeah, the tow
and
truck.
And between going at extreme angles to get it up and dropping it off at my place, somehow the thing that broke off unjammed and landed in the basement and in the basin of the vehicle, which I think has a magnet.
Did you hear it go clunk or something?
Oh, I'd written the thing off as parts.
I mean, when it freed up, were you there?
No.
You didn't hear it go clink?
No, oh, okay. that was our translation the next morning when my nephew came by.
I think maybe it was your nephew who waved his magical hands over the engine.
Maybe that's
be,
it. Yeah.
Put it back in working order.
I should be accusing him of witchcraft.
He's a genius.
Yes. Thank you, Stephen. Whatever it was you did. I think
indeed.
He bumped it in just the right way.
Yeah, indeed.
So anyway, that's all I had to say. I just wanted to make sure we got all the announcements in. It's good to be back on the Speakeasy. They've changed a few things around here in the studio, so you really have to forgive us for some of the nuisances we imposed upon you today. But we're tweaking an entirely new, to a great extent, a new system in here, and haven't quite worked out all the kinks just yet.
Yeah, but we're real.
Yes, John Paul likes
real live radio.
John Paul likes the scratches, the coughing, and all the sounds you would never hear.
This is I guess it's real.
This is transparency in radio.
That's us. We're transparent as you can possibly be. In fact, we're invisible.
Let's convert that to politics, shall we?
It would be good if we could do that.
Indeed.
Well, just one more shot from my end.
Oh, please don't shoot.
People, look up stuff, okay?
Yeah, come on.
Look it up. Don't take my word for anything. Don't even take Alan's word for anything. Look it up.
Don't just wake up in the archipelago.
Yeah, research it yourself. Google it.
The gulag.
Google 9/11
Alexander
truth.
Alexander Zolzhenitsyn, ask him.
You know, Google the Mena Airport in Arkansas. Google the Bush-Clinton connections.
This is how governments take over, and then suddenly people realize what they're in.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that's going on has been going on for a really long time. If you really want to know the truth, you can find it. The truth is out there. To quote a phrase
and
from
we're not,
a famous TV show.
And we're not so sure this is the land of the free anymore. We begin to think it's the land of the fee. So,
if you look back at Germany, most of the people in Germany in the 1930s, when Hitler was taking power, they could do what we're doing right now. They could talk on radio shows. They could walk around unencumbered. Most of the people in Germany never suffered any consequences from the fascism that was going on in Germany until the United States firebombed the place and
killed the famous Kristallnacht
killed hundreds of thousands of people for no reason. just like they did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But, you know, it's stuff you can learn about. Just go and research it yourself.
Did you lock the door when you came in?
I did, but they got in anyway.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And then now they're getting ready to take us away.
Alan, you have anything else to add to this, Juice?
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to play our ending music, and we're going to get the heck out of here.
Yes, Will. You've spent another wonderful hour. I'm going to quote the car guys. No, I'm not. Thanks for joining us on the Speakeasy. See you next time. Cheers.
All righty.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea as the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with a song of my heart, and the song of my heart with a voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift, adrift. Drifting ever back to you.